Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting to my right, my co-pilot, my pilot buddy in charge, Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto. Between the two of us, we've got a bushel full of gray hair.
We got what I have left.
Yeah.
Beard's all gray.
You know, I talk about gray-haired guys a lot, and I want to tell you a funny story. The other day, have you ever had an oil leak, a small oil leak on an oil pan or a timing cover or an intake manifold?
Sure.
Other than replacing the gasket, is there anything in the middle?
In the middle?
Yeah. I mean, can you fix it other than replacing the gasket? Have you heard of anything?
You know, there's patches to maybe reduce it, but there's no right way other than taking it apart, cleaning it up, and fixing it.
100 years ago, I'm working at a gas station in 1968, and this guy has a small leak on the front of a small black Chevy where the timing cover and the oil pan meet.
Yep.
Okay? Now, you can see it, but it's not a big one. It's just you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
So he cleans it up with brake fluid, brake cleaner, and he takes a vacuum line from the booster of the car next to him and wraps it around the dipstick of the affected motor. Then he takes the fresh air vent on the V8 side, and then he takes a PCV valve and he puts like 5 layers of duct tape.
Yep.
Now the motor's
in a vacuum.
So then he takes a piece of half-inch heater hose, puts it in his ear, and he waves down there, and he can hear the sucking of the air.
Yeah.
So then he takes a wet finger of silicone, and he dabs it in there.
And it sucks it in there.
It you can see it move in, at which time he pulls the vacuum line off. He doesn't want to suck it all the way through.
Yeah.
So I saw that so many times, and I was always amazed of his skills and talent. And he would say to them,
finesse.
Yeah, I'm going to bid it for the oil pan or the timing cover or both, but I'm going to try something first. And you have to bear with me because I may give it back to you and it may leak worse or may not leak or it may leak the same. But I want to try this.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the option to save that money.
That's right. And if it works, I'm going to charge you $75. And if it doesn't work, you don't owe me nothing. I'll go back and do it. So I went to the shop on Friday and Jason was doing that on a truck, on a diesel truck that had a real small oil leak. So he cleaned it up with the brake fluid, and he had his vacuum pump hooked up to it.
Right.
Okay. No, not right.
Well, if he had a regulator.
He didn't have. It was just a vacuum pump. It was like one of those brake fluid suck vacuum pumps.
Yeah.
So he's got him and my son and a bunch of them around the car, and he says, it's not coming in. It's not coming in. And Alan says, it will, it will. And so I kind of walked by a couple times, and then finally I see the hood still open. I see everything gone, and I went over to Jason. I said, how did it work? And he goes, it didn't work. And I said, I want to try it my way. I said, I want you to go get 20 feet of 3/8 vacuum or fuel line from parts, and I want to hook it up to this gas motor right here because there's no way you drew 16 or 18 inches of vacuum with that pump.
With that pump, yeah.
No way. And so I said, I want you to go to the dipstick tube, and I want you to do this and this. So then I walked by a few minutes later, and he's down there with his light, and he wets the silicone, he pushes it in, and he's got somebody up on top, and he says, okay, it's in, pull it, pull it, pull it. And I said, okay.
So that didn't have enough volume to
suck
the crankcase, yeah.
So then that was kind of before noon, and I said, now you got to let it sit, so just let it cure. I said, just push it out into the parking lot, open the hood to the sun, and let's see how long it's going to take. So then I had to leave for a meeting, and later that afternoon I called and I said, what do you think? And he goes, well, it's hard to the touch, but he doesn't want it till Monday, so we're going to let it sit overnight or for the weekend. I said, perfect, but it'll work. Now, there's no risk here. It's a little bit of time.
Right.
There's no risk.
Yeah.
And, of course, like some of our customers, a patch is okay for right now.
Yeah.
And it's written up as a patch.
Right. There's no guarantees with patches.
Right. You know? But the most important aspect, the difference between what they did and I did, was we used another engine for the source of vacuum, which is a much bigger volume.
It's a bigger pump, yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to this little bitty, you know, pump that he's using. So anyway, they all laughed at me, and one of the guys speaks Spanish, and he called me the viejo, the old man. And, you know, and so it's okay. It wasn't disrespectful or anything like that, but that's what we old guys bring to the table. We just bring some ways that we learned. And the young guys don't necessarily embrace it until they get a little gray hair of their own, and all of a sudden they see What's that movie? Grasshoppers. They see grasshoppers, young kids.
Mr. Miyagi.
And working a little harder than they really need to be.
Yep.
You can get that out if you'll just do this and this, and then you don't have to take all of this apart.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, except we've got one, and we're going to get to you in about 12 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They've been a trusted name for automotive repair in the Phoenix area since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob is in the shop, and he is one great diagnostician, and Ellen runs the front counter. So you have the very best of both worlds. Now, Bob's really good in diagnostic. You can wave that proverbial red flag in front of him, and you say, no one can fix this problem. And you'll see him paw the ground with his foot, and you'll see him snort, and he'll go find your problem. He's really good at that. But he does auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, all kinds of stuff. But he's really good at tracking down the problem that nobody else can find. So, service repair, both foreign and domestics, Larry Harker Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Good morning, Joe. How is it?
Good morning.
I can help you? Good morning.
I'm glad you're talking about the olden days, because I have a 65 Ford that has a generator, and I drive it about every 2 weeks. I went out to drive it. It wouldn't start. I checked the battery, a four-month-old battery, and there was only 8 volts on there. So I went ahead and put my charger on it, charged it up enough so I could start it, took another check, and across the battery I had 12.5. And just for the heck of it, I pulled the negative cable off, and the car ran. So anyway, so then I went ahead and charged it up completely, and I put the battery back in the car, and for 3 days I would check it once a day with nothing hooked up to it. It still had 12.6 volts. Then I put the cables back on for 3 days and checked it, but didn't start it. Again, 12.6 volts. So on the third day, I drove the car. And I went out, got it hot enough, you know, about 10 miles of driving, came back in, pulled open the hood, checked it again, only had 12.4 volts, and when I removed the cable, the negative cable, the car died.
Okay, let me tell you something. We cannot let everybody know that pulling the negative cable is a good idea.
Okay, sorry.
It's okay. You gave us an opportunity to address that. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely death. For anything north of what, 1981?
Yeah.
Anything. Right. You're talking major problems. So those of you that are listening, when he's got this car running and he's pulling the negative cable, here's what he's saying. It's a Ford, and I hope it catches fire.
I'm not saying that, and you know that. And it's a generator, too. Remember, it's a generator.
It doesn't make any difference. You completely fool the system at that particular point. You're saying to the regulator, oh, the battery just went to zero. So the regulator tells the generator, give me all you've got, and if there's a weak spot in that generator, you just found it.
Okay.
So, you got any comments, Mr. Old Mustang Guy?
You know, anytime somebody talks about these things, because, you know, I had an old 63 Galaxy with a generator, I was hoping he wasn't asking me how to do the polarization thing with the regulator after I replaced the generator, because I can't remember. That's been too long ago.
It's either 1 and 3 or 2 and 4. I can tell you that much. It's you're going to full field you look at the battery, and I think the battery's 1. It's the big cable. Don't, Joe, do this until you look it up, okay?
All right.
Do this.
I think what you do is you first of all, you start with the plug undone. And so you start the car up, and obviously we've taken the regulator out of it, and then you jump either 1 and 3, and you know what? Somebody will call in and correct us, and that's good. 602-508-0960, someone older than we are. And so you're going to jump 1 and 3 or 2 and 4, and then you're going to full field the generator, and it's at that point you're going to take a voltage reading. I think we don't really use a voltage issue that much with generators where we do with alternators, because in an alternator car we want, Bill?
13.5, 14.2, you know.
With it running.
Close to 15 running.
Yeah. And at 12.9 and 13, you're 100% charged. And to give you a reference, at 12.4, you're 40% charged. At 12.6, you're 60% charged. That's engine off. But Bill's right. We want at least a half to 1 volt over what battery voltage. So if you start with a fully charged battery at 14, then a half is 14.5. And like Bill said, you can be north of that a little bit as well. So 13.5 to 14.5 is what we want. In your case, I'm not real concerned. You pulled the negative cable and the car died. I don't think that tells us anything. Does that tell you anything?
Well, it makes you suspicious of the fact that the charging system, the first time he tried this, worked.
Okay.
And the car kept running. And the second time, it didn't keep running. It makes us suspicious that the charging system sometimes doesn't work based on those test results, but those are not the most accurate of test results.
Well, and let's discuss this out loud. He started off with 12.4. Why wouldn't the battery at 12.4 continue the ignition system?
2 minutes.
Why did
it die? He disconnected the negative cable and the battery's out of the system.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. That's what we're good for, is taking...
So that's why I'm thinking...
Yeah.
It's not the right test.
Right, right. It
that's what they make voltmeters and things for.
Yeah, it's not a test
but
that we would use. And you're right. It is suspicious that... But I think what you ought to do is get on the internet and see if you can find how to full field a Ford generated car. And once you do that, then you're going to leave the battery connected, pull the plug on the regulator, jump 1 and 3 or 2 and 4, whichever it is, start the thing up. Bring and have your voltmeter connected, and we should that generator full field, it should at least make 1 to 1.5 volts on top of what you started with.
Okay.
So if you're at 12.5, you should get 13.5, maybe even 14. Now, I've seen generators pump out more, right?
And depending upon speed at idle, if this thing's idle in 460 RPM, a generator's not worth much.
You're right.
Well, that's the other question I had for you. When it's at fast idle, it's 14.6.
Well,
and when it's and then when it this was time that it, the car didn't run, it was at idle, which is about 700.
Well, 14.6 is certainly the right number. I would expect 14 to 15
at high idle.
Right.
Yeah, that's a fast idle. Yeah.
So the question you've asking us is why did it run one time and why did it die the other time?
Well, the question is I thought I had some sort of a battery drain or something because my battery went down to 8 volts. For no apparent reason, and I thought maybe my generator wasn't working. My question is there? How can I troubleshoot the voltage regulator or the generator on the car?
I think what you do is you charge the battery to a static level,
okay.
And you leave it connected and check it every morning. Have a piece of paper and you write it down.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the battery voltage decline, then I want you to pull a cable and do the next 3 days.
Okay.
And if you see the battery voltage continue to decline, you have a shorted cell.
Okay.
If you don't see it decline, then you have a draw. And
okay.
Obviously the regulator on that old car would be the first thing, unless, of course, your wife's in the trunk and she's got the light on.
Yeah, no, I checked all the lights and the radio and stuff like that, and so that was my question. Is it possible that the generator could have, you know, something stuck and just drew the juice out?
Well, you could also, doing what I said, you're going to isolate the battery from the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you can pull the plug on the regulator and isolate it as well. So
okay.
This is going to take you a while.
All
see,
right.
We do something different. We graph it.
We
have an oscilloscope, and so we're going to graph that voltage.
Okay.
So we'll walk away for 2 hours, and we'll see a degradation that you're not going to see on a digital voltmeter.
Okay.
So we're gonna do those three tests in a period of just a day, in an 8 hour day.
And what you might find in this case, from what you're describing, that this could very well be an erratic problem. Having a voltmeter, an ammeter on the car could help you identify that. You know, yesterday the car was fine, but on the way home from Fry's,
right.
It's no longer fine. Now's the time to do these tests.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the conclusion I'm grabbing. That sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's not. And yeah, that's...
Well, and then the other thing, too, is you got 2 amp meters. You can put an amp meter in parallel to the regulator, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or you can use an inductive amp meter. And so you can do either one of those. The inductive's a little easier to use, but it's not like you can mount it inside the car. And like Bill said, intermittently the problem comes and goes.
Right. Right.
So it's not like, unless you loop that wire all the way through the car and put your inductive amp meter around
okay.
there. But an inductive amp meter is a far better tool. And here's
okay.
why. You can find out the trunk lights on with that inductive amp meter.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, good luck. Thank you, Joe.
Well, thank you.
You bet. 602-508-0960. We're going to call this the Two Gray-Haired Guys Show. Two Gray-Haired Guys Show. So the 65 Mustang, we got that covered. How deep shall we go? How old? Are you good in the 30s?
I had a 65 and a 63, and that's about as old as I can recall ever owning.
I'm going to go back to 55, 54, 55, actually to 50s. I can go from the 50s.
So you got much
north.
More generator experience than I.
Well, you had no choice back then. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto. And between the two of us, we've got more gray hair than anybody out there right now. So one guy calls in and he says, what's a generator? Bill?
Well, people get confused. They see these lights on their dashboard and they say, my battery light's on. It must need a battery.
Right.
Well, those lights on the dashboard are talking about the charging system isn't going to be charging the battery.
Right.
And back in the day, it was a generator. Generate electricity for the battery. Now we use alternators. They're more efficient.
Okay.
But a generator, you should just create electricity and push it in the battery for you. Alternator works way better at slow, like idle speeds, especially when you got the air conditioning on and things like that. And it's Mark had a good analogy a little earlier.
Go ahead.
About the alternator. He says the generator is a one-way thing, and the alternator is more of a circle. Just doesn't just push electricity. It goes round and round. It's got these diodes in there, this diode trio, mm-hmm. that kind of rectifies the electricity. It means it lets it go one way and not the other, and it kind of circles around and charges things up really efficiently.
And it's we got rid of generators in the 70s. I don't think we had any generators in the 80s at all. And so after that, everybody has an alternator. It's just the older cars that have generators.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's go to the phones real quick. Pete, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Well, got another little 65 Ford problem.
Well, 5 gallons of gas and a road flare will usually solve the Ford problem, but we'll be willing to talk to you.
All right, let's try a different approach.
Okay.
Pulled my car out of the driveway one day to work on my garage door, and then when I went to back it back in, the power steering didn't work. Well, I finished backing it in, and then I lifted the hood and realized that all the pulleys were looking down at my crankshaft pulley that had come off the crankshaft.
Okay.
Well, it had come off the crankshaft because I found the bolt in the driveway.
Okay.
And it had cracked when it come off. And I have, for the last 3 months, been trying to beat a Woodruff key out of the slot.
Oh, gosh.
So I can replace the pulley.
Yeah. You should have got help on that. You should have got. I mean, us gray-haired guys have done that many times. And here's the question to you, Bill: How many keys have you really screwed up before some gray-haired guy taught you how to get the key out?
You know, they were mangled up more in my early years.
Yes, absolutely. Let me give you an example. A cowboy brings over an axle to me the other day, and both races are welded to the axle. And you can see they've been beaten on that thing with everything imaginable. And he says, you know, I told him you could get this off because you always brag about this. And I said, I can. And he says, well, I need to take this back. And I said, no, it's going to cost you. He says, what? And I says, $5 a race. I says, I'll have both of them off in 10 minutes or less. And he goes, deal. So I pulled out my die grinder and ground the 12 o'clock and the 6 o'clock on each race.
Came popped off
them
in two pieces.
So he gave me $20. He goes, it was worth it. No, I said, no, I'll take your 10.
Now, you can't die grinder the front of your crankshaft.
No, you can't. No, you can't. Almost always, it's going to be better off if you pull the timing cover so you can work on both sides of that Woodruff key. So that's really what you need to do at this particular point. But a lot of times, if you have the ability to rock one end and the other.
No, it's only half there.
Okay, well.
And it's just, it just doesn't move.
Okay. Well, I know it doesn't move for you, but here's the problem. If you were to take a blunt on one end, keep in mind that's half round.
Mm-hmm.
So you take but you can't get to it with the timing cover on it. So if you put a blunt on one end and you tap that side, then you go to the other end and you tap that side, pretty soon you're going to rock that key out of there.
It breaks it loose.
So, but if you use a center punch, you're going to swell up the metal. And then you're going to cause it to stick even more. So you have to use a blunt, and it has to be the same size. That's how we take it off.
Now, there's two kinds of keys. Some of them are flat, and they go in a groove, and I've seen Fords that had one of each.
Right.
And then some are the half round. Is yours the half round?
No, yeah, mine's the half round. I can feel the slot, so I can tell that it's a half round,
yep.
And it's half there in the half round, the back half.
Well, let me ask both of you a question. If it's half sheared off, how do you know it's half round and it's not square?
Well, I can stick a little wire or my little screwdriver, and I can feel the way the slot goes. You know, it starts and it's slot. You know,
oh, and that's true. If the crankshaft is half round, the key's going to be half round.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's no easy way around it. You might have to pull the timing cover off of it. And
2 minutes.
The timing cover off.
Yeah, usually the key that Mark's describing is kind of disappearing pretty darn close to the crankshaft seal in the timing cover, which means in order to get much of anything, whether it's even if you're just going to try to get underneath the back of it without doing the rocking thing, you pretty much have to get behind it, which means you remove the crankshaft or you remove the timing cover because that sounds a lot easier. Email Mark a
picture
in case we're missing the point here.
Pete, can you see both ends? Can you put
because you're right. The crankshaft seal is right at the edge of.
Okay.
Now I got an old 289.
Okay. Well, we've given you the best advice we can give you. This is what we do. You got to take the timing cover off of it. Besides that, doesn't that have a loop across the front of the pan on the 289s? I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah,
it has a lip. So now if you take the timing cover off, you got to figure out how you're going to put that lip seal back on there because 99 times out of 100, that leaks unless you've done it before numerous times.
1 minute?
No, I haven't. This is all new experience. Okay. I've never expected this problem.
I understand.
Yeah, I understand.
Well, the easiest thing to do, what part of town do you live in?
Glendale.
I'd call Tom at Thunderbird Auto. He's north and west of you.
And yeah, I know right where he is.
Yeah, you say to him, Mark Salem says you probably can't get this key out, but I'm wondering if you want to comment on it. And and he's an old enough guy. But if you're in Glendale, you're close. You're 25th Street and Indian School.
Not terribly far away, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm at 59th and Cactus, so I'm very close.
Oh, yeah. All right.
You're real close to Tom.
Yeah, you're real close to Tom. So I'd challenge Tom and ask him, give me the top end of it, because I'm thinking if you have to pull the cover off and put the cover back on and get that keyway straightened out, and maybe he has to... We have to look at the old crankshaft pulley, the harmonic balancer, to see if it's going to work, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
We could be into this thing for $300, $400, $500.
Which means when you look at all these things, you might really be happiest letting somebody take over.
Yeah, I think you would be. Anyway, I got to run. We'll be
Thank
back.
You.
You betcha. We'll be back right after this. All righty. Welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mark and Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto is here at your service, so if you have an older model car, we can usually help you on something like that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Air Park Auto Service. Air Park Auto Service and my shop, we opened up about the same time in the late 70s and early 80s. Stacy and Nadine opened up Air Park Auto. Stacy passed away from leukemia, but Nadine is still running the operation. She's one of the few in the United States that I know of that answers to no man. So she's running the store. And with her experience, she kind of knows the difference between a line of BS and the truth. She's been around the block. But if you live in North Scottsdale and you don't have a repair shop, Air Park Auto is my suggestion. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, which is just south of Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard or south of Bell Road. But Nadine's a good place, and those of you that are ladies that have a tough time finding a shop you're comfortable with, if you live in the North Scottsdale area, again, Air Park Auto. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, and I think Raintree's about 3 or 4 blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard. Okay, so we have a couple of old cars. Let me tell you a story about a couple weeks ago. A guy calls in and he says, hey, I've got a Ford Fusion, and I've got a headlight out, and they quoted me $800, and they said they had to pull the front bumper cover. What's your first blush?
My first indication is, did this guy say it was a Volkswagen New Beetle? Because that's the first car I came across where you had to take the bumper off to get to the headlight. I didn't know you had to do that on a Fusion. We take care of a number of Fusions at our place.
Okay.
So it made me think, I wonder if it's really an $800 headlight replacement, or should this guy get a second opinion?
Which is what I said to him. I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I can tell you this much. Honda and Camrys are famous for that. You got to oftentimes pull the front bumper to do a lot of stuff, especially condensers and stuff like
Yeah.
You got to pull. What's that radiator support? The core support.
The core support.
Yeah, pull that out. So anyway, I said to him, I think I'd get another opinion. He ends up in my lobby. All right. And I happen to be there. So I said, what did we quote him? She says, we didn't quote him anything. We're going to just look and see. Mm-hmm. So I walk outside. They put my senior guy, Eddie, on it. And I walk up to Eddie and I go, how long do you think it's going to take to get this bulb out? And he hands me the bulb and he goes, 29 minutes. I said, is this a real bulb? Because if you're going to embarrass me, I'm going to walk up front and you don't have the bulb out. I'm telling you right now. And he starts laughing and he goes, that's the bulb that came out of this car. I said, I want to know what you did. He said, look it. This is just... Yeah, if you want to pull the bumper cover, you can. But he says, I took the coolant bottle and I moved it backwards. And then I had this particular, I don't know if it was an evaporator container or something. He says, and I had loosened it up and I moved it over here. And I reached in and I pulled this bulb out. Here's the bulb. So I walked in and I said, I know that they quoted you nothing. But here's your bulb. And if you want to pay, you owe me 30 minutes. So that's $67.50. And he says, really? And I said, no, that's really your bulb. He says, okay. I says, like a $35 bulb. You want me to stick one in? He goes, of course I do. So here's where it turns ugly. We plug the bulb in. We put it in. We put everything back together.
And it doesn't work. Because it wasn't the bulb's fault.
It wasn't. So we take it back out again, and the plug is melted. We just never noticed it because it's in that area that we don't.
Yeah, hard to see.
Yeah. We find out that Ford has a new ceramic plug because this is a problem.
No, because it's a problem. Ceramic is a good heat.
Exactly. So we cut the wires. We go get a plug. We put it back together. And then I say to him, here's the hard part. The hard part is we put your old bulb in because it works. He says, I'd just as soon you replace the bulb. And I said, okay. Now keep in mind, this is a $60 R&R, remove and reinstall. So, you know, it's whatever you want to do. Frankly, I don't know what he decided to do, but he could have left the bulb in there knowing full well that it's a $68
labor. Not an $800.
And not an $800 labor kick. So it's not that I'm a hero on this deal. It's just that the second opinion paid him big dividends.
Right.
And that's the purpose of me saying to you and you saying to them, get another opinion. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I want to tell you about a restaurant we went today. We had a couple of birthdays in our family, so there was 9 or 10 of us that went to a breakfast place called Oink.
Okay.
And they serve bacon.
I bet they're really good at bacon and sausage.
They are. So we sat down, and we all ate, and the food was absolutely great. And now, let's pretend there's 10 of us. And we had coffee, we had mimosas, we had, the kids had orange juice, the kids had this, the kids had that. We had everything. How much? What do you think?
Well, some places this could be $1,000.
Okay. I'm thinking at least $15 a person.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm thinking at least $15 a person.
Oh, yeah. It probably at least better with mimosas and stuff, yeah.
Everybody at the table is part of the business, so I pull out the business card because we're having a staff meeting, and the bill's $98.
And $10 a piece? Not even.
Honestly. And so I paid the bill and I
left. This is a good advertisement for Oink.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. So I asked for the manager. And you know that when you ask for the manager's heart skips a beat. So I see him talk to him and he starts walking my way. So I walk and we kind of step off to the side and I said, hey, I just want to tell you something. And you can see in his eyes that he says, I'm never coming back. And I said, I'm going to tell you something. We enjoyed our stay here. This is the first time we've been here. We really like the ambiance and we really like the food, but you're too damn cheap.
Yeah.
He says, why? And I says, I just fed 10 people for $98. And I says, we've been to other places and the bill's been twice that much money.
Sure.
So I said, even if you charged me from 98 to 110, you've increased your net profit by 10 points.
Right.
But I'm not here to tell you how to run your business because I've never worked on a restaurant. But I can tell you something. I says, I'm monitoring my competitors. And I said, I'm not as low as you are in this case. He says, well, we're brand new. And I said, your name of your restaurant's Oink. I said, it was hard to get my wife here, but we're really happy, and we'll be back. So anyway, it was an interesting conversation, but it's like anything else. When somebody asks for the owner, you walk downstairs, your stomach's in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, you're going, oh, boy.
That can't be good.
That can't be good. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, or if you have a what kind of car should I buy, or if you have I got this estimate, all that kind of stuff is well within our wheelhouse. Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto. 25th Street and Indian School?
25th Street, just north of Indian School, by the Taco Bell there.
Just by the Taco Bell north. And Bill's been in our best car repair shops for years and years and years. And I have never had a complaint about Bill in any way, shape, or form. And as a matter of fact, I've sent a lot of customers to you who were kind enough to respond to me and give me a grade for you. I think you can do better than a D-, but we'll discuss that on the other side of the break. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Bill Conium here. We're going to be here until noon talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us. We have two callers. And before we talk about the callers, talk to the callers. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is the only shop in Mesa that carries the designation that Mark Salem recommends them. Why is that important? It's because I only recommend shops that have been in business for 5 years and that I've personally inspected and that I've personally known the owner, and I trust them to keep Mark Salem's butt out of trouble. And so these guys are really the very best of the best. And as far as Mesa is concerned, Thompson's Auto Repair is the best. They have ASC certified technicians. They're not going to sell you everything in the world. They're not going to flush your wallet. All you have to do is meet Brian and Thelma, which is the husband and wife that own Thompson's Auto, and you'll know why they're on my list. They are the salt of the earth. They're exactly the kind of people that you hope your son brings home, or you bring, or your wife or your daughter brings home, but they're married, so forget about that. The idea is Thompson's Auto Repair. They're on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Great place to go. Jenny, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Oh, hi. I tried to get in the speakerphone. I have a 98 Buick LeSabre, and engine light stays on. And it's due for an inspection, and they told me it won't pass because of that light being on.
Yes. Here's what's going on. The light is yellow, Jenny, which means caution. It doesn't mean stop. It doesn't mean that this is an emergency. It just says that the computer sees something wrong. Now, the computer's not smart enough to tell us exactly where the problem is, but the job of the shop, the job of the technician, is to find out what state the problem's in, and then the city, and then the street, and then the address. So you can go into the auto parts store where this three-whiskered kid, who might have three whiskers on his chin, and he's going to plug this little thing into the dashboard, and he's going to say, oh, you have a bad oxygen sensor. I'm here to tell you that only 10 to 20% of the codes, and he's going to pull the code from the computer, of the code that says oxygen sensor actually necessitates the change, the replacement of the oxygen sensor. But let me tell you this, Jenny. His job is to sell parts. So when he says to you, Jenny, you have four oxygen sensors and I want to sell you all of them, you're going to spend $200 or $300 on his guess, and the chances of him being right is about 1 in 8. So here's what has to happen. Your computer, because it shows a fault code, it won't go through emissions. And so you have to have that fixed first. Now, do you have a regular shop?
No, I don't.
Where do you live? I mean, the cross streets.
The area of Bell and 67th Avenue.
67th and what?
Bell Road.
Bell?
And Bell Road.
Okay. If I were you, I would look up Thunderbird Auto.
Thunderbird Auto.
Thunderbird Auto. And he's on, let me look at the thing here real quick. He's on Thunderbird at 88th Avenue.
Very close.
He's very close. And his name is Tom, and you're going to say, I have a check engine light on. Some guy on the radio suggested I talk to you, and he's going to say to you, I'm going to charge you this diagnostic time, and then I'm going to find the problem, and then I'm going to bid the repair. Sometimes, about 15% of the time, the diagnostic is the fix as well. So by the time we find the bad connection or the loose vacuum line, then it takes, you know, $85 to find it, and it takes 2.5 cents to fix it. So don't count on that. Don't count on that, but I'm just telling you, sometimes that's what happens, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, ma'am. You're welcome. Good luck. And if Tom takes advantage of you, you just call me back, and I'll go over there and and spank him really hard with a big stick with nails in it. Is that something I should do?
It might be appropriate.
But he's bigger than I am.
Well, that's why you get the stick.
Okay. All righty, Tony, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning, Tony?
Good morning. I have a 2016 F-150 FX4 Lariat. And the front sits a little lower, and I was thinking about doing a leveling kit because I like to go up north and go hunting. I want to get a second set of rims with some mud tires to put on when I'm out doing that. And I don't want to get stuck in the ruts and stuff with the street tires. The information I found about installing a leveling kit in the front is you basically have to disconnect everything. And I was thinking to myself, why wouldn't you just compress the springs and insert the spacer in there and then lower it back down onto the where it should be and then thread the bolt?
Do you have any idea what the size of the coil spring compressor, the tool to compress the spring? I doubt very seriously if we have one that's strong enough to compress it where the coils touch. And I think it's in your best interest to drop the axles down a little bit and not try to load that spring. And keep in mind, you've got to raise the – if you put a 2-inch pad in there or a 1-inch pad, you have to raise the spring 2 inches. So you have to lift up the body. You have to lift up the truck by the frame, let the wheels dangle. But you're going to have probably 2 inches of clearance, and I don't think you're going to get that with a spring compressor. And I'll tell you why. My son does this all day long. It's called leveling the nose.
Right.
So we level on Dodges and we do lots of Fords and stuff, and we've never been able to sneak the spacer in there. So I think I think it's a matter of just calling around and getting numbers on it. Is it a four-wheel drive?
Yes, it is.
What are you thinking about snow tires on the back on a four-wheel drive? I'm talking to Bill.
Well, if he's going to be off-road, I'm really just fine with an aggressive tire all the way around, but they got to be the same tire all the way around.
And it's a circumference issue. I suppose if you had somebody mount up a snow tire and then they took a cloth measuring tape and went around the highway tire and then went around the snow tire, they have to be pretty doggone close. I'm talking less than an inch. So the circumference is important for four-wheel drives because we can't have, in an exaggerated way, we can't have bicycle tires on the front and slicks off of a dragster on the back. That really causes problems in four-wheel drive.
Real hard on the
system.
But
I wanted to get bigger tires just so that, because the ruts are always, the stock tires, you're going to drag all day long every time you hit a rut.
Okay, and if you do that, you have to ensure that you're talking to someone who's skilled at this, because the worst possibility is after you level the front and you put bigger tires and wheels on it, then all of a sudden you start rubbing those front ones that you didn't have that before. So as the body raises up or as the wheel comes into the wheel well, it rubs, and now you're out four-wheeling and you're having to deal with the rub even though you've lifted the nose off of it an inch or two. And that's a real problem. So back tires aren't so much a problem because they're just moving up and down, and they're not going left and right as well. So whatever you do, just make sure that you look them in the eye and you say, listen, you're telling me these tires and wheels are going to work. I'm going to spend $1,000 or more. You're going to spend between $1,000 and $2,000 depending on what kind of wheels you got or which kind of wheels you want. And if they rub, if they don't perform good, then I want to bring them back. Now, you also are going to affect your odometer and your speedometer. So how are you going to deal with that?
I don't drive that fast.
Yeah. And actually, sometimes on Fords, we can go in with the scanner and we go into the ABS folder and we can actually change the diameter or the circumference of your tire. Now, Bill, I'm going to ask you this high school question.
Make me do math.
It is math. It's just a formula. I don't want the answer.
Okay.
What's the formula with respect to diameter, circumference, and all that kind of stuff?
Pi the radius squared? No, that's for the surface area.
Diameter squared. Diameter times pi gives you circumference. But you were right. You were right. And you actually put it in more mathematical terms, but the diameter of the tire times pi gives you that. But it's far better just to wrap a cloth tape around inflated tire.
Yeah.
So that's how I would do it. I would look at a variety, and then you have to aim the headlights as well. So don't forget, this is going to be an issue that's evolving. You're not going to be able to just do one. You're going to have to do multiple things to bring the nose up.
The car was all engineered one way, and whenever you change things, you change more than you thought. So you, there may be some benefits and some drawbacks and some extra things like aiming headlights when you get done.
Well, and that's the reason why I know that is because when we first started leveling out the front end of trucks, then they came back and said, everybody's flashing their lights. Did you guys mess with my headlights? No, we raised your nose. Remember that? So we got to drop your headlights. Well, I'll just do a couple of screws with a screwdriver. Nah, let us do it. Well, you know, we know exactly what to do. But anyway, that's what you're up against, Tony, is you know, next time you see a Ford Lariat that's got some work done to it, then just leave a note on the windshield and say, hey, would you call me and tell me who did your work and are you happy? That's an easy way for a referral.
Great. That's why I call. Thanks for the advice.
All right, good luck, Tony. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is over on 40th Street in Washington. If you've ever gone up and down 40th Street in Washington, maybe on your way down to court or to a Suns game or from a Suns game or from court, then you've probably driven by Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE. It's been around since 1968. 68. I'm not going to tell people how old we were in 68, but I was just becoming a gas station jockey on working the full in the self-service islands, and I'll tell you how long ago it was. Gasoline was 27, 29, and 31, and we had just had the mid-grade come out. And Volkswagen Beetles filled up for $4.
I was going to say $4.20.
Exactly, exactly. So anyway, and Phil is not that old, but he is well-skilled when it comes to that. Transmission repairs, replacements, going to the next level and providing great products that meet or exceed OEM specifications. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great place. So if you live in Phoenix, anywhere in Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington, Automatic Transmission Exchange. This is a hard question to ask, but it's a hard question to answer, too. What is it that people say in the front lobby that just makes you kind of tighten up your jaw a little bit? They'll walk in. Maybe they're a new customer. Is there anything that you can think of that just kind of scares you? Let me explain. My dad would say that if you have somebody come in that you have a bad feeling about, just shoot them a really big number. He says, because they'll usually go away.
They'll usually go away.
And he says, they won't say that you're an a-hole. They'll say you're expensive. He says, it's better than having them condemn you because you have a big mouth or you're an idiot. So he says, you know, it's better than that. There's a little bit of merit to that with respect to businesses. But I'll tell you what bothers me is either ladies coming in and telling me that the neighbor said this is what's wrong with their car. Or it bothers me when a guy comes in and tells me how he wants me to fix his car according to Google.
2 minutes.
Now you've touched upon the one that bothers me most. Is I looked on the internet, and this is what's wrong with my car.
Yes.
That makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
I'll do better than that. This wads up my panties. I mean to tell you. And this is what I say to them in a nice way. Let me get this straight. You want to spend your hard-earned money based on a guess from someone you've never met before. You have no idea of their skills or anything. You don't know if they heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend. You have no idea, and you want to spend your money on their guess. Why don't you let me stand up to you and say, I need some diagnostic money. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. And I can tell you unequivocally that 7 out of 10 times, maybe 8 out of 10 times, they were wrong.
Say that the most time, yes.
And here's my thing. Is junk in is junk out. So when they ask you what your engine vacuum is, people can't answer that.
Right.
They don't know it should be 16 or 18 inches of vacuum. So when you start communicating with someone and you give them bad information, they're going in the wrong direction. That's why we don't ask our customers, what's your engine vacuum when your catalytic converter's plugged up?
Because they don't know.
They don't know. So that's what bothers me is the Google and the internet and the YouTube stuff. That just kind of bothers me.
It is a great source of disinformation.
Well, and it's you're spending your money on someone's guesses in Cincinnati, Ohio, whose name is Jockstrap 7. You know what I'm saying?
And they have a Grand Marquis, but you have a Chevy.
Yeah. You know? 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Bill and I are here at your service, and we promise not to make fun of you. And I promise for Bill, too.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside.
Good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. For the next hour, Bill Conium and I are going to be talking about cars and car repair questions. And no, we're not going to talk about my comment last hour about jock step strap number 27. We were talking about, you know, Googling a problem and having some guy named jock strap 27 or 72 or whatever the heck I said answer your question. I think it's not a matter of that Bill and I are sensitive to the fact that people go on the internet and look for problems for their cars, because once or twice a year, someone will come in and said, I studied the problem with my oil pressure gauge, and there is a technical service bulletin about the erraticness of my oil pressure gauge.
That's real data and can be very helpful. But in our industry, use technical service bulletins daily.
And the technical service bulletin says two things. You must have this kind of car, and you must have this kind of symptom. And then the repair is specific.
Right.
But before you go in and look at an erratic fuel pressure gauge, you really should unscrew the oil pressure gauge, put your gauge in there, and see if the signal is truly erratic.
Right.
Because if it's erratic, that technical service bulletin isn't going to fix nothing.
Fix it. Yeah.
So it's really a process of getting there. So we just had that happen, I don't know, a month or two ago, and it was a reprogram of the body module. And so, you know, mm-hmm. Do you guys reprogram Dodges by chance? You flash
Dodges is a problem currently.
It is a problem for everybody. Yeah. I mean, we can flash Hondas, Toyotas, Jaguars, Mercedes, Chevrolet, Fords. Oh, we do a lot of Ford work. But Chrysler is the dog that's holding all of that stuff together. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost, I would say it's fair to say it's a monopoly.
Oh, yeah.
They are holding all that technology real tight. I know that the DRB3, which is the scanner that you must have,
right,
is $20,000.
Which is why we don't have it.
That's exact for us too. That's exactly right. We don't have it either. So there is ways around that. But the idea is that for $128, we can reach the cloud for Chevrolet, Ford, Honda, Toyota, mm-hmm. and we can download that stuff. We did it at BMW not too long ago. It was a 14-hour download.
Wow.
We started it when we closed. And we told everybody to leave it alone. Don't touch it. Because even if you open the door and illuminate the dome light, it will queer the deal. You'll have to start over. So the car has to be in this static condition, and the voltage has to be 13.2 or higher. So you have to put on some kind of a battery tender.
Right.
And you cannot open the door or anything. You have to leave the car alone during this download. So you can't charge by the hour. It has to be, you know, an overnight price. Anyway, S&S Tire is in the West Valley. They're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. At S&S Tire, they offer the most comprehensive line of tires and many different brands of the same size tire. So I say to you, if you go to S&S Tire, they'll look at the tires that you have, and I would suggest that you say, I want good, better, best. I'd like prices for all three. Now, I can assure you that the price they quote you is write your check on Monday and come in on Wednesday, and that's all you're going to owe us. They're going to give you all those FETs and balancing and weights and valve stems. That's all included. So it gives you an opportunity, because maybe you have a leased car and you're going to turn it in. So I don't think you'd want to buy the best tires that you could get. I think you'd want to buy the good tires. Put those on. But on the other hand, it's going to be a car you keep. Maybe you'll take the middle grade or the high grade. One way or another, though, S&S Tire and Auto Service is a great place to start. They've got tires from big tractors all the way down to wheelbarrow tires. So I'm quite sure they've got what you need. And in addition to that, the two things that go along with tire sales is alignments and suspension work. That's a beautiful thing, because they can see an alignment issue or see a suspension issue and warn you that this is stuff you need to have done, or it'll affect your new tires like it did your old tires. That's kind of neat. S&S Tire, West Side, good guys. Let's go to the phones. Ken, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a 2015 Tacoma, and, you know, it's only like 50,000 miles or so, but when I drive between 50 and above and I start to press the brake on the steering wheel, it shakes so bad, and I'm wondering what's causing that.
Has Bill worked on your car lately? I'm just asking. I'm just teasing. All right, you get this one.
Is this something that happened really recently? Like you went and had your tires rotated and balanced, and it was fine, you know, a week before, but a week after, then this problem suddenly cropped up?
No, it's been recurring for a while, but I always, every 5,000 miles, have my tires. They're still in great shape. I go every 5,000 religiously and get it rotated and balanced.
Good. They probably don't need to be balanced that often, but rotating is a great thing. You're taking good care of it.
Right.
The reason I said that is somebody who doesn't do the wheel installation process correctly can bend your rotors and make them crooked, because that's what we have here. Layman's term would be warped front brake rotors, because you can feel it in the steering wheel, so we know the problem comes from the front of the car.
And it only happens in braking.
And it's not a wheel balance issue. It's not a bent wheel.
Keep going.
And certainly not your wheel. It's not your wheel alignment. I've never fixed a shutter problem with a wheel alignment. What's really likely happened is what they call rotor parallelism. The rotor is a little fatter in one spot than it is 90, 180 degrees on the other spot, and that's when you really feel these kind of things as the rotors go around and round. So that'll be the problem. I tell people, I'm like Mark. We're here to fix your car, but I'm not here to scare you or make this a bigger deal than it is. I tell people that this is a rather benign problem. It's a nuisance. It's not a safety or dependability thing unless it's horribly severe and you feel you're losing control of the vehicle. Or unless it's in conjunction with a worn-out car, you might lose control of it.
Well, it's this. Your cup of coffee shakes violently off the dashboard, and it sloshes coffee from passenger to driver's side. That's the bad one.
So what you can do is they'll have to machine, or in rare cases, depending, your car's low enough miles, they won't have to replace the rotors, but they'd have to machine them true again. You can wait until it's time for brakes, and this problem goes away at no additional charge, or you can make a special trip in and take care of it, and you'll be happy again. My advice is the next time you drive down Sunset Point, don't use the brakes to maintain your speed. Downshift out of overdrive and let your engine and drivetrain slow the car down.
And at 50,000 miles, it's probably pretty likely in the next 20 he's going to do brakes on the front.
So he might wait.
Right, and you could wait on that. I agree with everything Bill said. It's not something that's going to cause you a lot of problem, unless, of course, that the suspension and the steering is going from lock to lock on you, and you're hearing this clatter and thump underneath, and that's pretty violent. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives you a flavor for that. You can turn the rotors on the car, or you can take them off and turn them on a machine. The new process of turning them on the car helps you determine if the wheel bearings are stable as well, because you could have a bad wheel bearing causing a rotor wobble, which causes the brake shutter that mm-hmm. you and Bill just talked about. So if you wanted to check it yourself, raise up the front end with a floor jack and grab the tire 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and push and pull, push and pull. And you cannot condemn that tire till you go to the other side and do it. Then if they both feel the same, that's going to be okay. But if one of them walks back and forth an inch and the other doesn't, then you know what your problem is.
Yep.
But at 50,000 miles, we're just talking about hypotheticals, and I don't think you should hang your hat on that. Okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm going to write you down for brake shutter. And you can take it into an auto parts store and have them turn your rotors. But like I said before, any idea what you do on the car fronts for?
We always wait until it's time for brakes.
Okay, so you're kind of holding out.
It's never bad enough.
Okay.
You know, it's just in your best interest. In you have, it's all about your time and money. You're going to make a trip into the shop. You're going to spend money. You're going to, like Mark said, you're going to be buying brakes in 17,400 miles anyways. Just wait.
You're right.
You guys have a recommended place to go?
Where you at?
Oh, my shop, of course.
Where's your shop? In Chandler?
25th Street and Indian School.
Oh, God. Where do you work?
I'm over here in Gilbert.
Okay. Let me tell you something. Bill's at 25th Street in Indian School, and certainly that's a great place to go. I want you to know that this is kind of an embarrassing time for me, but there's nobody in Gilbert, nobody in Chandler, nobody in Ahwatukee, and no one in the southwest corner of Tempe that I have filled. That area is, I don't have a shop in that area. I'm the only shop in that area, and I'm over at Warner and I-10 just east. So
okay. We
can help you with that, but Bill can too, and so can Thompson's over in Mesa, who's on Stapley and Main Street. So I don't know who's closer to you, but those are the three shops north of you, northwest of you, and west of you. So there you go, three
your
shops.
Your shop sounds like the place to go.
It's as good as all the rest of them. So I'm proud to say that I have people that do better work than I do, and I have people that do work almost as good as we do, and then both of us have a whole lot of shops that that are just now learning what we learned 20 or 30 years ago. So that's really what it boils down to. Thank you very much, Ken. Thank you very much.
And Rick is your next caller.
Rick, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark and Bill. I appreciate you taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2000 Mercury Grand Marquis that I purchased in 2015 as a used vehicle from a dealership. And it's a very nice car. Everything is, I like everything about it, except I'm having a problem with the air conditioning.
Wait a minute. And when you're going down the road, it's okay, but when you throttle up, it stops blowing out of the center vents.
No.
Okay, I'm just guessing. Well, it was a good guess.
It was doing that for a while. Okay. It was doing that for a while, but now it will only blow out of the out of the window vent.
You want that one?
I put it on max, on regular, on whatever, and I run the temp down to 60 degrees, and it blows hot air all the time.
Okay.
Most cars are designed for safety reasons. If something goes wrong with the system, it should default to hot air blowing to the windshield to keep it clear so you can see.
Okay.
So I'm going to say your car is broken.
What?
I'm going to say your car is broken.
One minute.
All right. I want you to picture this. I want you to picture the letter capital Y. You with me?
Okay. Yep.
On the left side of the arm is cold air. On the right side of the arm is hot air.
Okay.
And then they join where the tree trunk is for the bottom of the Y.
Okay.
And then that's the vent that comes to you. So if we want half cold and half warm, then we put a door in between the left Y arm and the right Y arm, and the door takes half of each.
Right.
But if we want cold air, and that's on the left side, then we shut off the hot air. Well, that's okay. Called the blend door.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have another door that will redirect the air, what we call dash, center, and floor.
Yes.
So the question is you've got something stuck on the default. And even at air conditioning, you still get hot air at air conditioning?
Yes.
Okay. It either has to be the control panel, it has to be a blend door problem, because it's certainly not anything else.
Okay.
It's the hot air, right?
Well, it's still blowing to the windshield.
No, you're right, too.
So,
what we're concerned
first guess is we lost vacuum to the system. But
yeah.
Some of these cars, I think this one's going to be a vacuum system.
And if it is, then what we do is old gray hair guys like us, we know exactly where the line goes through the dashboard. We know exactly where it's supposed to go. We know exactly. And you know what? I fixed a lot of these Fords because the port at the back of the intake manifold is plugged with carbon. And it's what supplies the feed to the dashboard.
Right.
And so what I'm doing is I'm bypassing that and just applying another source of vacuum. Everything works. Give it back to them for a day or two. Everything still works. Bring it back. Now we got to clean out the port.
Right.
It means I got to remove the fitting, and otherwise I run a risk of sucking all that carbon back into the motor.
Right, back in.
So I'm thinking that this is going to be, dependent on the process, I'm thinking you should be grateful if it's under $100.
Okay.
Because it could be something major.
And it can be that simple.
It can be that simple. Thank you for that. It can be that simple. So that's what I would do. But you know what? You did a great job. Here's the two bullet points. Number one, it won't blow anywhere other than up on the dash, up on the windshield, defrost mode. And
correct.
Number two, it will not change from hot to colder. It's always
correct.
Hot.
Yeah.
Those are the two key issues. You need to enunciate that perfectly, and then they don't have any excuse not to fix it.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for your help.
You bet.
And hope you have a great day.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mary. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Gil answers the phone. He just got out of jail, and you might ask him what his probation is like. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to you, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got two lines out of the five open. If you'd like to join us, you got three in front of you, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me on my right is Bill Conium from 25th Street Auto. He's flying co-pilot, and there's times he's going to have to be the pilot because sometimes I just don't know everything. So that's the reason why two heads are better than one. Nevertheless, I want to tell you about Action Auto Repair. Tom at Action Auto Repair is at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. He served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1979 and north of that. When you know somebody that long, and they've been in business that long, you can take it to the bank that he knows what he's doing, and more importantly, he knows the difference between right and wrong. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then see Tom at Action Auto. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and he and his staff will do a good job in educating you about your options with each and every repair. That's Tom at Action Auto. Let's go to the phones. Dan, good morning. You're first. How can we help you?
Hey, hello. Well, it has to do with engine life, I suppose.
Okay.
The rear end has a 073 gear. It has 33-inch tires. Would I go the way of the overdrive transmission or change the gearing?
On what kind of vehicle?
77 Power Wagon.
An overdrive transmission is going to aggravate the problem because it's going to make your 373 gears, you know, a 343 set. So I can tell you that every Jeep that we put 33, 36-inch tires on and your Power Wagon is akin to a Jeep, we're putting 488 gears front and rear. And
cost of something like that?
You know, I can't quote you. That's my son's business. Do you have a pencil handy?
Yes, sir.
480-598-1234. And you know why they gave you that number?
I'm listening.
Because my head bone isn't that big enough to handle any other number. Nevertheless, talk to Alan. And what you're going to say to Alan is what's 488 gears cost front and rear in an old Power Wagon? And then you're going to say, tell me what kind of speedometer change I'm likely to have, because he has a software program that can tell you that as well. He can't tell you what your RPM's
going to
be.
I know it's exactly 10 miles per hour off, so I can read the speedometer okay.
Okay, all right. And really and truly, there is a respective amount of change depending on the total circumference of the tire. So as you go from a factory tire to a 33-inch tall tire, then that percentage difference is going to relate to your speedometer. So you have two problems here. You're going to, if you do the 488 gear set, you're going to have no problem. But if you turn around, you're going to have a speedometer problem, an odometer problem, and you're not going to be able to cite on your tile that this has the original miles. You're going to have to put unknown.
Well, we're way beyond that.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And I just wanted to draw that to your attention, that's all. But thank you for the question, Dan. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you.
You betcha. Mark, you're up next. How can we help you, Mark?
Second call on a overheating problem, 2001 Tracker, Chevy Tracker.
Okay.
I called, it's been a year, I just kind of let the thing sit, and I need my commuter vehicle back.
Okay.
It's overheating. Before you had talked, I talked to you and you thought it might be obstructions between the fan and the small cooler electric fan. That wasn't it. I've checked.
Wait a minute. We need to ask you some questions.
Okay.
Where does it run on the gauge?
Well, it's going all the way. It's going all the way to the red zone.
Okay. And does it cool off when you get on the freeway? Does it happen predominantly city? Does it happen predominantly highway? Which one is less problem, the city or highway?
Okay. It was doing fine as far as at about 35 to 4,000 RPMs, 3,500 to 4,000 RPMs, it will run cool. Whether I'm on the street doing a 45 mile an hour or 30 mile an hour or on the freeway, it'll do okay in that zone. Well, I found out that after going through checking the splines on the water pump, after I changed the thermostat, I changed the clutch, the fan clutch, and that all seemed fine. And then the simplest problem, I found the bottom, the main smallest belt was loose. I probably could have started there doing that. I thought, okay, great, found the fix. it went about 10 miles, maybe 15, 20, and then it started overheating again.
Okay, now, you know that none of this is going to help us, okay? This history stuff doesn't work for us. So what you've got today, what I hear you saying is if you're in the 3,000, 4,000 RPM range, that everything's okay. Describe on the gauge what okay means.
Okay. Between the dummy heat and temperature doesn't have an amount, so it's about halfway.
Half to three-quarter is normal operating range.
Right.
Okay. So you say that it gets up close to the red, but you say...
No. It goes into the red and then sometimes all the way deep into the red. So, I mean, it's definitely over here. I can literally hear it boiling.
Okay. Well, you're giving us information that it's kind of like this. The customer walks in and he's bleeding from the arm, but he tells you that he hasn't had anything poked in his arm. You're telling us that it overheats on highway and city. Then you're telling us that sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's not, and you're giving us an RPM range. And both of us are terribly confused because that what you're telling us is something. Have you ever heard of that?
I mean, it just doesn't quite add up. The thing that points out to me is it goes deep into the red and sometimes beyond, and I hear things boil. That's when the engine gets cooked.
Right.
But by the time it's just barely touching the red is you turn it off and tow it into a shop and have it fixed.
But then you say, I mean, the things that cause this kind of problem are thermostat. But that's the thermostat, whether it's stuck open or stuck closed, is completely different than you're describing. Fans. If we have an electric fan problem at 60 miles an hour, it's going to be fine.
And is yours a built-driven fan or an electric fan?
Both. And they're both, I've checked them both. The electric fan is fine.
Okay.
And they,
but when you tell us you checked them both, you really don't. I'm sure you don't have the skill level to check them both. Let me ask you this.
But there are specifications and tools.
Yeah. How did you check the electric fan?
Okay. After it gets to a certain running temperature and so forth, I can actually hear the fan kick in, go up in front, and actually see that it is actually kicking in and running.
So it moves.
It moves.
Does it move sufficient airflow? We don't know.
Right.
There's CFM for that.
Is his tracker has his tracker got an air conditioning cycle fan where we turn on the air and we have the evaporator or the condenser cooled by the fan?
That's my guess because I don't picture a tracker having two cooling fans.
Exactly. So we don't know if that electric fan is triggered off the AC side or maybe it's triggered off some excessive side. We don't know if the fan clutch is really working. But here's what we have to do. We have to do a better job on the symptoms because that car is going to overheat cold, slow, or fast. It's going to be one of those two. That car is going to have a different problem or that car is going to have some other symptom that we're going to be able to test because the RPM range doesn't help us. And so if the radiator's plugged up, it's going to overheat faster. And when you're going slower, the temperature is going to be dramatically different. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a radiator. We're looking at any kind of a restriction. There's a difference whether it's fast or slow. So, you just really need some guidance. And what they need more than anything else is facts. So it's not – when you say, I check this or I check that, that's going to go in one ear and out the other because you can't even identify – typically people can't identify what the proper operation of a clutch fan is, a belt-driven clutch fan, and especially an electrical fan. So
I alternated the old fan and the new fan, and there's no difference whatsoever.
What does that mean, you alternated it?
I put the new one on thinking, okay, this is going to fix it. No change whatsoever, still the same symptoms.
Are you talking about the belt-driven fan or the electric fan?
The belt-driven.
Okay, so we've eliminated that. But anyway, I got to go. Thank you very much. Barry, you stay right there. We'll get you right on the other side of the break. Welcome back, everybody. Let's kill the speakers here so we don't have a roundabout or echo, which is something I always do. And Gil says, Mark, would you please kill your studio speakers? and yes, I will, Gil. I'll kill the speakers. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurtz Auto Repair is at I-17 in Bell. There's three guys at Kurtz that are really, really good. Actually, all the staff is good. But Kurt is the owner, and you just have to meet him to understand he's not going to put up with anything. Now, Eric and Jeff are his service manager and his lead technician. They both are master techs as well as Kurt is. So you have the top three guys in this organization that have all passed all eight automotive tests and are designated master tech, and there is no higher certification for anybody in our industry other than being a master tech. So when you talk about Kurt, you're talking about people that really know their stuff. I-17 in Bell, northeast corner, been around since 1987, gas, diesel. He hates it when I say this, but he also works on your gasoline, weed, your leaf blower, and your lawnmower. So if you just want to play a joke on Kurt, then just take your gasoline-powered leaf blower over there and ask him if he can do an oil change and a tune-up, and he'll know you talk to me. All righty. Let's go to the phones real quick. Barry, thank you for holding through the break. How can we help you?
Thanks. I was wondering if you could recommend a shop for me. In the Sun City area. I have a 94 Ranger that has an intermittent problem that's kind of strange. You're driving down the road, going straight, everything's fine, and all of a sudden the thing will start to shake as if one of the tires, my guess would have been the front passenger tire would have been maybe got a bubble in it or it was out of balance really bad, and it'll just start shaking. And if I put my brakes on, the truck will kind of veer to the left, and the steering kind of wants to pull to the right.
Okay.
And I'll go home and park it, and then get up and, you know, run some brush out to the dump with it, and it's fine.
Okay.
It's very strange.
All right. Both of us are shaking our heads. We can guide you. You want to take a shot, and I'll you're on first base. I'll be on second.
There you go. And Mark will have a shop to refer you to in your part of town. When you said this, I thought, boy, it sounds like he's talking about a Jeep Wrangler.
Yes.
Because they're real famous for the death wobble.
Track bar. Track bar. I mean, but unfortunately, his Ranger doesn't
It'll
have that.
A little
but
different.
It's the same thing.
It's going to be the same thing. Best I can tell over the radio waves here is that there's something loose in the front end, mm-hmm. and it begins to, you know, move a little this way, that way, and it starts to shudder. And then if you ever rode an old-fashioned roller coaster or an old train car, and things are kind of clunking back and forth and wobbling, that's what's happening in the steering. It's slapping left and right and left and right, and sometimes you can jerk the steering wheel to the left or hit the brakes, and it puts some forces in the front end that stops that slapping from happening. If you were a motorcycle, they would call that a tank slapper.
Well, and I'm going to – it's like a shopping cart that if you go slow,
the
wheels don't wobble.
Wheel.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Now, here I'm going to tell you how to fix it. Or not? I'm going to tell you how to find it, Barry. Are you ready?
Yeah, I don't like to work on vehicles.
That's okay. I want you to do this. I want you to turn the key to the on position, start the engine, and you're outside the car, the window's down, and I want you to stare at that driver's side front wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Stare at it. And I want you to take your hand and put it on the steering wheel, and I want you to go left and right, and a little more left and right each time. And I want to make sure that that driver's side front wheel moves in absolute synchronization with the steering wheel. I don't want any delay at all. Then I want you to get your neighbor, your wife, one of your kids, whatever. Now they move to the driver's, to the steering wheel, and you stand over by the passenger side and you put your hands on the tire and your eyes on the steering mm-hmm. wheel as they go back and forth.
Okay.
I can guarantee you that one side of the other is going to have a delay that the other side doesn't.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that, now, here's the kicker. If you want to, you lay underneath the car, but make sure that whoever's behind the wheel of the car loves you. And you leave it in park, set the parking brake, and they move the steering wheel left and right, and I guarantee you that you're going to be able to see some joint that's going to, instead of moving in complete synchronization, the top and the bottom joint, it's going to, the top's going to move, then the bottom. Then the top's going to move, then the bottom. And
okay.
That's the problem.
Something's worn out.
Yeah, okay. So, and there's something in the suspension that's worn out, and you're going to have to fix that and then realign it, and then all of a sudden you can drive down the road with a hot cup of coffee between your legs, and you don't have to worry about that shutter anymore.
And then,
okay,
like you said, you probably don't want to work on this car, so you might not care to crawl underneath there and find out what it is, so Mark's got a referral for you.
Yeah, where at? Where do you live?
I live in Sun City.
Okay, do you have anybody that you like?
No, I actually just moved out there, and I just bought this feeder truck to carry tree trimmings around. So.
All right, I'm going to send you to Grandin Bell.
Grandin Bell.
And that's S&S Tire, and they do suspension work. And they're very, very good at what they do. Grandin Bell. All righty?
All right. And did you say S&S, like Sam, S&S?
Yeah. Are you a fireman or a policeman?
No.
Okay, but you're right. That's what we always do phonetically. And the pilots do a different phonetical alphabet, but Adam, Boy, Charlie, David, Frank is cop stuff. So when you say S&S, Sam, then that's cop stuff, and that's the reason I ask you, buddy.
All righty. Thank you very much. Well, thank you. I appreciate your show and your service. It's a great service.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break. Alan and Ken, please wait. Stay right there. It's my fault that we're off time, but I have to make it now. Otherwise, Gil uses bad words in our earphones. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let me make sure that we've got everything like we're supposed to have it, and we do. Let me clarify something. I just talked to Barry. And he had this Ranger, and I told him S&S was at 88th Avenue and Thunderbird. No, I'm sorry. I told him it was Grandin Bell in Surprise, but there is an S&S there, but there's also one on South Grand and 91st Avenue. So there's two S&S tires in that location. One of them is in Surprise, and one of them is in Peoria. So... Barry, no matter where you go, there's an S&S in Surprise or one in Peoria, and you said you were in Sun City. So I think that's the area I meant to talk about. And thank you for the correction for whoever called in. Let me tell you about IMM Auto Service. IMM is a good friend of mine. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Here's why. He works on Saabs, Volvos, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos.
Well, we have to have somebody to do that for us.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I say. He works on all kinds of cars, no matter what you've got in your garage, but he can cover 100% of the cars that the rest of us don't really want, that 4%. The Volvo, the Saab, the Fiat, and Alfa Romeo, anybody can do an oil change. But when it comes to every time I shut the door, the steering wheel turns right and the horn honks, you need help with that car. And that's what IMM is all about. They're in the northeast quadrant of Tempe, just south of the 202, west of the 101. They've been around since 1972. David owns the place. I've known him since 1972. He is a good guy. And the fact that he's been around since 1972 tells you all you need to know, because bad guys don't last that long. IMM Auto Service. Talk to David. All right, let's go back to the phones. Alan, good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, I've got a 2005 BMW 745i, and in the morning when the motor's stone cold, when you first start it up, it runs terribly, and it acts like it's running lean. And the codes show are all symptomatic, showing, you know, missing random cylinder misfires, and on all eight cylinders misfires. But once it's warmed up, and throughout the day, as long as there's been a little bit of engine temperature on it, it will run just fine. It's just when it's stone cold in the mornings does it act like this.
Okay.
And I don't know a good BMW shop. I'm at the end of my wits. I'm pretty mechanical, but okay. I'm not getting enough information to figure out what it is.
Okay. Well, first of all, you've jumped to a conclusion here about Rich Lean. I want to caution you about that because it could easily be a crank sensor or a cam sensor. It could easily be something with the ignition system because the random misfire is saying that. If you had a lean condition, it would be something quite different for us senior guys than a rich condition.
Yes.
The rich condition would cause the car to smell like sulfur. The catalytic converter would be struggling with its efficiency. So I think it's clear that it's a spark or fuel problem, one or the
right.
other.
That's my suspicion.
But I think you need to call Joel at Arizona Imports.
Okay, that's Joel at Arizona Imports.
Yeah, he's over in Tempe. Tell him Mark Salem said he doesn't know a thing about BMWs, but he's the only guy I could think of.
Okay. You wouldn't happen to have their number handy, would you?
You know what? I do have his cell phone in my cell phone, but I can't
I'll Google it up.
Yeah. Hold on. How about this? I just found it. 480-966-5913. 480-966-5913. As for Joel.
And they're familiar with BMW.
He knows more about BMWs than I've ever learned. As a matter of fact, I called him the other day about a specific question about a BMW, and boom, he knew the answer right then.
Okay.
But thank you very much for that.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right, real quick. Did you know that on certain BMWs that they actually have a pyrotechnical device on the positive cable that when you're involved in an accident, it blows the positive cable off, but it doesn't let the car run? Did you know that?
That's a really good safety thing, and I've never heard it, so I'm thinking you're making it up.
I'm not. I'm not. But now, I'm going to take the issue with the safety thing. Let me tell you the rest of the story. Ladies in California, she's on a 7-lane road. All of a sudden, traffic slows down dramatically, all the lanes. This guy rear-ends her. About a 20-mile-an-hour hit. He takes off. So she's disabled mm-hmm. because the rear-end collision right. pops some airbags, and the positive cable was blown off. So she's in the middle of the road, and then BMW comes on the entertainment system, the BMW from the cloud.
Right.
Hi, Mr. Salem, we just noticed your airbags deployed. And she goes, my car won't start. I want to get off the road. My car won't start.
Right.
She gets hit in the rear end at 70 miles an hour with a limousine, and she dies. Now I want you to rethink about the good idea.
The good idea,
yeah.
It's the same thing with the inertia safety switch that turns off the fuel pump in the event of a collision. You could be stuck somewhere.
But how many years did the Ford inertia switch actually appear in a car?
Well,
about five. And
all the years I worked at the Ford dealer.
No, you're right. And it was real predominant late 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And it was in my motorhome at 94. It had a Ford chassis with an inertia switch.
Sure.
But they're not there now.
Yeah.
And the issue is had that lady had the ability to start that car and pull it off the side of the road.
The second accident never would have happened.
Not only that, is the police need the opportunity to take the car off the side of the road.
Right.
Because it's a hazard. Mm-hmm. So that's a good, draw your own opinion. Ken, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Ken? Good morning to you and to your guest.
Thank you.
I have a problem with the passenger window chattering. Going up and down, electrical going up and down. It's been repaired four times, and still the same problem exists.
Sounds Bill? Like it hasn't been repaired then.
Yeah, it hasn't been repaired. You're exactly
well,
right.
They say they put new parts in it. In fact, they had to order the parts, and we left the car over there until they came in. And
okay.
But
let me give you some advice, okay? You've paid for some work that's either created the chatter or didn't fix the chatter. And insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. In a very nice way, I would say to the shop, I think I need a fresh pair of eyes. And my intention is to have it fixed. And then after it's done, I'll bring the bill over and you and I will sit down, gentleman to gentleman, and kind of figure out what kind of perhaps financial participation you're willing to make on the repair. It may not be related to you and it may be related to you, but I think I'm going to do that. Bill, if somebody said that to you, how would you feel?
I would say that was reasonable.
Yeah.
I just couldn't stand somebody coming back to my shop multiple times with the same complaint, so probably would have been fixed already. But if this happened, I would want the customer to be happy, and I would want to do my part.
And it's clear that I need a fresh pair of eyes, no
right.
matter how
a
many
different
guys.
Technician in the building,
that's
or
right.
a different building.
That's exactly.
Right. I agree.
So that's what really needs to happen. But I think the chattering part has to do with the window itself. Is it rocking as you raise it up and down? Is it rocking left and right, forward and back? Or is it chattering up and down? That makes a big difference. So if it's left and right, then it's a track problem or a regulator problem.
Could be a loose track or a bind in the run at the edge of the window.
Yes, that's
correct.
It
tries to stop one side of the window, and then it let go.
That's exactly right. So there are ways that us gray-haired guys, we silicone the guides.
Yep.
And we wax the edges of the window to see if we can fix it. Then once we fix it, then we can kind of adjust the
right.
the
if
rack.
You can alleviate it, then you can understand how to correct the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think you need a fresh pair of eyes. And if your shop tells you that that's a bad idea, at first blush, I think two things. Number one, I hope it's not one of my shops. And number two, I don't think much of his response. And his response would suggest that he's kind of young in this business. And us older guys recognize that we're agreeing to what's in your best interest anyway. We need a fresh pair of eyes. So that's
well, interestingly, they've had a fresh pair of eyes, three of them, in fact. And the last individual who worked on it is far from being a young whippersnapper. He's a shop manager.
Well, it doesn't really make any difference.
The fresh pair of eyes might be in a different shop then.
It's nice that he's an old gray-haired guy, but see, here's the proof of the pudding. When you have a surgery done, you're not interested in close. You're interested in perfection. When you have your car painted, you're interested in perfection. So you're not happy, and that's the measurement right there. So the fact that they've – and I think he's talking about a dealer. We're not going to say the name, but obviously he's had – they've assigned it to different people in the dealership. That doesn't,
body shop.
Okay. Well, then I would take it to a glass company. I would take it to a glass company and have them look at it, because the glass company guys replace those windows that are broken all the time, and it might be somebody from a glass company to do it.
Or a repair shop versus a body shop.
That would be certainly another one. But that's the advice we've got to give you. That's the best I can do, Ken. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. Rick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hello there, Mark. I called earlier about my AC problem on a 2007 Mercury Grand Marquis.
Yes.
And I got your answer to everything, but I forgot to ask you about a shop or a garage that you could recommend.
Okay, tell me where you live.
I'm at I-17 and Glendale Avenue.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't take it to Kurtz at I-17 and Bell.
Okay.
I would not take it to Kurtz, because Kurtz doesn't know what he's talking about. Kurtz is a really bad guy. Kurtz drinks a lot. He chases women. He doesn't play tennis worth a darn, and he cheats at his golf game. But he's on the northeast corner of Bell and I-17, and you're going to talk to Eric, the service manager, and tell him what I said.
Very good.
All righty.
Especially about the golfing.
Yes, that's right.
Especially.
Thank you for laughing at that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, you betcha. All right.
Hey, Mark, that guy you asked where he lived, another guy you asked where he works.
I did. Why? Is that wrong?
Well, I'm figuring just about everything I know about you, there's always some strategy, and I figured there's probably a reason for that. Now, I have a reason when I ask similar questions at my shop. I just kind of wondered, did you have a strategy, or you just forget how to talk?
No, you're right. Both. And that's a great question. I think what happens is they may have said, I'm from this city, and I don't have a shop in that city. So the default question is where do you work?
Well, then where do you work?
Yeah, because I'm trying to guide them, but I think you'll agree, your car is either at home or at work or at your mistress' house or at the local alcohol establishment. Of course, I'm kidding. But I think home and work is where you need to be.
I have to agree. Very often when I help people, and I tell people all the time, I work for you whether your car is in my shop or not. I truly want to help people. So people call me and say, I need my car fixed, and I find out they're in Avondale. Mm-hmm. I said, well, that's a really long walk home from my shop in Phoenix. So I said, well, where do you work? And the reason I ask them that is I found out from personal experience, my wife had a Mustang. It was under warranty, and we needed to get it into the shop. And I found it was way easier to find a shop near where we work, because they could probably give me a ride to work.
Yes.
And get it taken care of, and then after work, I don't have very far. So I very often try to help people, do you work nearby? Well, I'll just give you a ride to work.
Right.
So and it also comes to their convenience. If you're at work, you don't need your car.
Right.
But if you want your car fixed near your house, well, that means you're going to do it weekends or nights.
Right.
Do you want to be without your car sitting in a shop?
You're right. You're absolutely right. You bring up a great point. No one's ever asked me why I asked that, but I think my brain just kind of works that way. Let me ask you a real quick question. You're at 25th Street and Indian School, so do you go to the Central Avenue corridor between 7th Avenue and 7th Street?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
And more all the time now that, because I used to say, we're not a great shop for people that work, down by the river bottom or downtown. But now with the light rail, it's a real short commute for us to get people to the light rail station at Indian School.
That's the best part about it.
Yeah.
That's the best part about it is your geographical area. We also have a geographical area, north, south, east, and west. That's our box.
Yep.
So we'll run you home. But if you're at Cactus and Tatum, I can't take you there.
Yeah.
So anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. You can always ask me a car question. If you leave me your phone number, I probably will call you back. We'll see you next week.